Hey everybody, it's me, Camille.
And me, Tim.
And we're back from our summer break.
Before you ask us where we went, how the beach was, or did you see old friends and family, you should know that the term summer break is kind of misleading.
Yeah, we've actually been hard at work this whole time, piecing together a series of stories for the rest of season two. And while we're excited about all of them, the story we have today really stands out.
It has a bit of everything. There's some mystery, almost $2 billion in federal money, even a super secret spy agency.
Ooh.
Not joking.
And telling this story with us today is Maria Altman, our business reporter here at St. Louis Public Radio. She's in the studio right now. Hey, Maria.
Hi, guys.
All right. So there are a ton of moving parts in this story and a whole lot of ground to cover. And even though we're going to kind of jump in here and there, we're going to hand off most of the show to you. So given all of that, Maria, where are we starting?
A farm in Iowa.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
I thought we were telling the story about St. Louis.
Yeah. Stick with me here. Because every time I think about this story, my mind goes back to this place. Do you guys hear that? It sounds like white noise, but it's actually wind and cottonwood trees on my family's farm in Iowa. I love that sound. It's my childhood, and I'm not sure how many more times I'll get to sit in this cottonwood grove. It's been in my family since 1936. That white farmhouse across the cornfield, it's more than 100 years old. My mom grew up here, so did I. But now my mom is in her 80s, and none of us four kids live nearby. So the place I will always think of as home is likely to be sold in the next few years. And this idea of home is at the heart of a story I've been covering 500 miles away from here. But close your eyes and listen. It sounds a little like the farm. This is St. Louis Place, a neighborhood in North St. Louis. Almost everyone who lives here is African American. This is urban St. Louis, but there are acres and acres of open space. In Sheila Rendon's backyard, it almost feels like the country.
And we got the mulberry tree there, and we've got that's a black walnut tree. So they come up probably July or August, they start, the black walnuts start coming out. And then we've got peach tree and strawberries.
Her parents and grandparents bought the two-story red brick home in 1963. Back then, the block was filled with houses, and the neighborhood was changing from white-owned to black-owned. Today, she lives here with her husband and two children. The former police officer is in her mid-40s. She calls this house on Melanfi Street her family's American dream.
Home ownership was the American dream. I mean, of course, these families could have never moved into these suburban neighborhoods that were, you know, idyllic and the imagery of, you know, the American dream, but this was their American dream.
And that meant turn-of-the-century brick homes in the city.
House pride is what everybody said around here. We may not have the best neighborhood, and we may not have the newest, the shiniest, or the most modern things on our home or, you know, showing in our home, but we are house proud. So, like, my grandparents would have never imagined being able to own a home when, you know, they were my age. And, you know, my parents were able to achieve that. And that was like a wonderful accomplishment, along with all the other parents around here. And I'm so happy that my parents were able to live without this concern, because this would have killed them.
What Sheila's talking about is that her house is going to be torn down. It's a sacrifice that some say must be made for a much larger victory. Because as proud as Sheila is of her neighborhood, others see it as a problem that needs to be solved. There are all the vacant lots and abandoned buildings. The schools have all been torn down, and there really aren't many people left.
There's no more neighborhood. And if you look around, it takes neighbors to actually have a neighborhood.
That's Democratic Congressman William Lacey Clay, who represents St. Louis. He and other politicians think they've got the project that will breathe new life into an area that's long been considered blighted.
And if you think that there's something to salvage, shame on you. You don't know what winning looks like.
So on today's show, we're talking about winning.
And how what winning means can depend on where you call home.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems, and the people they touch.
I'm Camille Stanley.
And I'm Tim Lloyd. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
To understand why Sheila's family has to leave their home, we need to rewind all the way back to February of this year. Maria picks the story up from there.
Normally in St. Louis, February means snow and ice. But on this day, it was actually sunny and warm outside. I remember it because I was waiting around with a bunch of reporters to get on a tour bus.
And now we're going to give you a little bit of our history by tour.
That's Democratic Congressman Lacey Clay of St. Louis again. We heard from him at the top of the show, and he's leading this bus tour of Sheila's neighborhood.
My great-grandmother had a home right down the street, and I was here on weekends. This was a much different place. Each lot was full of a house or building or business or industrial area. And all of that has, over the last 50 years, has really deteriorated and been lost. So we think we can rejuvenate this area with the location of NGA.
Did you catch that acronym Clay mentioned, NGA? It stands for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency.
And not many people know that this super secretive spy agency even exists.
It's actually part of the Department of Defense. And while you might not know much about it, you probably recognize some of its work.
Yeah, they helped map the moon for the Apollo space flights, and they designed the mock-up of Osama bin Laden's compound in Pakistan.
The NGA has a big headquarters in the D.C. area, but the NGA's western headquarters are in St. Louis.
Right. And more than 3,000 employees work at that St. Louis facility. It's on a campus that started out as a federal armory back in the 1820s.
Seems like they may be due for an upgrade.
Exactly. They're looking to build a new facility.
All right, so big federal agency, big federal contract. I imagine lots and lots of competition to land it.
Absolutely. Yeah. St. Louis was one of several locations in the running. Illinois was also trying to woo the federal government with land near an Air Force base just across the Mississippi River.
So Missouri officials are not just going to let this big federal contract go to another state, right?
Nope. Yeah. They were lobbying hard for the $1.7 billion project, which gets us back to this bus tour led by Congressman Clay.
I've invited the media to go with me on this so that you can see the real need for redevelopment of this area and understand that in order for us to rebuild this community, we have to have a project of scale like NGA. Across the street from us is the old Pruitt-Igoe site.
Pruitt-Igoe was the federal housing development built in the 1950s to get families out of overcrowded tenements. There were 33 high-rises. By the mid-1970s, the Housing Authority had literally blown them up.
The experiment lasted for less than 20 years. And of course, it was a federal disaster. And we think that bringing NGA will help right that wrong.
Today, Pruitt-Igoe is an urban forest with mounds of debris, right across the street from where Sheila, the former cop and longtime resident, lives. Throughout the tour, Clay points out vacant land and abandoned properties. But many observers say that what happened in this part of St. Louis Place didn't occur overnight or by accident.
This area didn't just clear out because everybody left.
That's Michael Allen, a local preservationist who advocates for buildings along with people and communities.
This area of St. Louis Place emptied out because the government evicted people, bought up their houses, tore down empty buildings as they came open, removed the housing stock that would have allowed this to remain a dense neighborhood.
And long before the prospect of luring the NGA, there were lots of ideas for revitalizing this part of town. An office park, a golf course, even a dog racing track. The list goes on and on and on.
Hey, everyone. We need to jump in and zoom out. Way out. Because to be fair, the pattern Maria just laid out isn't confined to the neighborhood of St. Louis Place.
And if you want to get a big picture view of race and policy in St. Louis, here's the guy you want to talk to.
Hi, my name is Colin Gordon. I'm a professor of history at the University of Iowa.
In his book, Mapping Decline, Gordon lays out in painstaking detail a series of decisions that marginalized black residents in St. Louis.
I mean, it's a really, in many respects, tragic story because from the perspective, certainly, of the African-American population of greater St. Louis, there is a really sort of two-punch strategy.
The first punch, so to speak, are racist housing policies that through the 1960s limited where black people could live in St. Louis. For much of the 20th century, that area was in North St. Louis, parts of the riverfront, and downtown. Here's the second punch.
Having confined African-Americans to those neighborhoods are then defined as blighted, as ripe for redevelopment, because they don't sustain the property values that local planners think they should do. And so what it really amounts to is in terms of residential opportunity, a very sort of truncated citizenship for African-Americans, because they can only live in certain neighborhoods. And then over time, those neighborhoods are then pulled out from underneath them.
Collins says the impact of these two big sets of policy decisions, legalized segregation, followed by blighting black neighborhoods to redevelop, established a pattern that can be seen over and over and over again.
So the site of the Jefferson Memorial on the riverfront displaced something like 12,000 African-Americans who lived in pockets on the riverfront with no relocation assistance whatsoever. The building of the first Bush Stadium, the clearance of the Mill Creek Valley had similar effects. African-Americans displaced from downtown moved into the West End. The West End was then sort of identified as ripe for urban renewal and gentrified, and African-Americans were squeezed out of there. After the mid-1960s and some of the civil rights victories made it more difficult to sustain hardcore segregation in St. Louis County, African-Americans began moving into the inner suburbs like Ferguson and Normandy and Wellston in the county. And then, you know, lo and behold, the county says, now we have blighted neighborhoods. We'd like to get rid of them.
All of the history and context Colin Gordon just laid out for Tim and Camille takes us back to the proposed site for the NGA in North St. Louis. Remember Sheila Rendon, the woman worried about losing her home? For more than half a century, her family has lived where the city wants the NGA to relocate. She says the city was always trying to reel in a big fish, some kind of big project. And as people left the neighborhood, she says the residents who stayed wanted to buy up the vacant property, but the city never let them.
They'd say, oh no, there's a development that's coming, and it's going to be great, and you just wait and see. I mean, even we tried to buy this land next to us, and we just started to garden on it because they wouldn't let us have it. And they sent us a letter, and they take your $25 to apply before they even ask what the address is so they can tell you don't bother. But they got a lot of $25 around here.
But not everyone was having a hard time buying up property in the neighborhood. Around 10 years ago, a handful of limited liability companies started buying up homes and lots. For 4 years, it was a mystery as to who or what was behind all these purchases. Then Michael Allen, the preservationist, solved the mystery. The buyer was Paul McKee, a successful suburban St. Louis developer, and he had big plans for Sheila's neighborhood and the rest of North St. Louis. People here didn't find out exactly what those plans were until 2009. At a public meeting, McKee revealed his vision for redevelopment.
If St. Louis is to be great again and to really grow, what does it take? It takes jobs, in my opinion. We develop jobs. We bring jobs to the community. We'll show you how we do that. If we're going to bring jobs, we can't bring jobs without land.
The plans covered 2 square miles and promised more than 20,000 jobs. On top of that, McKee promised no one would have to move. He would weave the project into the existing neighborhood. It would be called Northside Regeneration.
We believe the Northside can lead, not follow. We believe the Northside can set the pace. So what we're here to talk about is how we're going to do that, how we're going to create the energy to do that, and how we're going to participate together to do that.
Wait a second. Did we hear all of that correctly?
Yeah, Maria. Kind of sounds like McKee just promised the moon.
And some people felt that way. But what I heard from city officials over and over again was that nobody else was stepping up.
All right. Now we've got this big developer who says, I'm going to remake parts of North St. Louis. I bought a bunch of properties, so how does the city respond to that?
The city says go for it.
Okay.
The St. Louis Board of Aldermen passed a $400 million tax incentive package that McKee could draw upon once the development began.
So what happened?
Nothing. Not the jobs, not the houses, not the community development.
Really?
Well, you have to remember it was 2009, so the city and McKee blamed some of the stagnation on the recession. Then there were lawsuits over the tax incentives, which McKee ultimately won in 2013.
All right, so around that time, the economy is starting to pick back up. He's got his legal fights behind him. Is this when the project takes off?
Well, not exactly. But the next year, McKee and his partners quietly responded to a request from the federal government. And while no one knew it at the time, that request came from the NGA.
Coming up, the NGA, a suburban developer, and the legacy of the past all collide in the North St. Louis neighborhood, and some residents start to push back.
This is generations. We've gone on for years and years spinning our wheels. And we want the people to be heard.
All right, to quickly recap, the legacy of racist housing policies and disinvestment have emptied out parts of North St. Louis. Previous attempts to reverse that, even a much-hyped plan by a local developer by the name of Paul McKee, have fallen flat.
But officials say they're working on a game changer. The National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, or NGA, which already has a compound in a wealthier part of South St. Louis, wants to build a new facility. It can stay in town, or it can move.
So local officials are trying to sell the NGA on building its new facility in North St. Louis. But if this happens, it would push some 200 people, like resident Sheila Rendon, out.
Local officials say that's a sacrifice that must be made for the greater good of the entire city. Maria Altman, St. Louis Public Radio's business reporter, has been following this saga for years.
And as we hand the story back to her, St. Louis officials are ready to do whatever it takes to keep the spy agency and its more than 3,000 high-paying jobs in town.
Okay, let's go back to February of 2015, and the pressure to land the NGA project continues to mount. The city wants to guarantee the federal government that they can clear the land, so it approves the use of eminent domain. That means now the city can legally force people to sell their homes to make way for the project. Against this backdrop, the level of anxiety builds among residents. An 81-year-old named Charlzetta Taylor, whose family moved into the neighborhood in 1946, becomes the face of the opposition.
Many of us that live in the neighborhood do not want to sell our homes. We are proud homeowners, and we like our neighborhood. We would like to stay there.
3 months after the city approves the use of eminent domain, Charlzetta and a national group called the Institute for Justice delivered more than 90,000 signatures to the NGA. They want their neighborhood, St. Louis Place, off the shortlist for relocation sites.
Our homes are a lot more than brick and mortar. Our homes are our heritage. They represent the lives of our fathers and our grandfathers who struggled to become a part of this nation, to own land.
The city ultimately offered to physically move her home. A few months later, Charlzetta took the deal. Hers is the only home that will be relocated rather than demolished. And after that, she stopped leading the opposition. But others filled that void, including Sheila Rendon and her husband Gustavo. In fact, Gustavo was arrested when he tried to keep city workers from removing a sign that read, "No eminent domain, no NGA." The sign was placed on property that was once the site of a Catholic church and now belonged to suburban developer Paul McKee.
I guess he's pressing charges for us stepping on property that used to be, first of all, sacred grounds. It used to be St. Leo's Church. And property that we as a community take care of. We've been taking care of this property for a long time. And Andres picking up trash and maintaining things that he doesn't do, you know.
Even after his arrest, Gustavo and a friend camped out at the same former church site. They fasted for a month. But then, late in the day on March 31st, came the news.
Yesterday was, without question, one of the best phone calls I've ever received as mayor.
This is St. Louis Mayor Francis Lay during a big press conference the next day.
And NGA Director Robert Cardillo told me that St. Louis is the preferred site for a $1.75 billion state-of-the-art intelligence campus in North St. Louis. Yeah.
A collection of Missouri's top politicians touted the victory for St. Louis. It was a victory for Paul McKee, too, the developer who had quietly started buying up plots in North St. Louis more than 10 years earlier. In fact, he owns more than half of the land in the NGA site. Now the city has to buy that land from him. He didn't get behind the podium during the celebration, but on the big day, McKee told reporters this.
To be blessed with a $1.75 billion acre is beyond all expectations. Now, when the federal government says it's going to happen, we're going to spend $1.75 billion here, that's huge.
At that same press event, Congressman Clay brushed aside concerns about residents who will be displaced. And what he says will probably sound familiar.
This neighbor, there's no more neighborhood. And if you look around, it takes neighbors to actually have a neighborhood. And that's what I've told the press over and over. I will take you through that area right now. And if you think that there's something to salvage, shame on you. You don't know what winning looks like.
Obviously, Maria, not everyone is happy with how all of this went down. And we should point out here that this is not about creating more than 3,000 new jobs in the city of St. Louis. This is about moving existing jobs from South St. Louis to North St. Louis.
But you got to remember, these jobs are pretty high paying.
I think the
average salary is $80,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to an area of town that hasn't seen a lot of investment. So, Maria, is this going to make a big difference?
I had the same question. Is the NGA going to be an economic boon for North St. Louis?
Economically? Hell yeah.
That's Sarah Coffin, a professor of urban planning and development at St. Louis University's Center for Sustainability.
So the federal government is writing a check for $1.7 billion and investing it in Northside, which is unprecedented. So of course there's going to be a market made.
Here's how Coffin explains market made. Investors will come in because someone else is betting on the area. In this case, the federal government.
They've essentially bought up the risk, a large percentage of the risk, because they're coming in and planting a flag and saying, we think this is a good place to locate, and proof of that is that we're going to invest $1.7 billion. And so the rest of the developers, they may sit back for a few years and see after it opens what happens, but there'll be a few right at the front that say, oh, wow, I've got to get in there. I've got to get my whatever project out there.
Coffin says the market doesn't take into consideration the people who already live there. She says that's where the city and federal government need to be hands-on, possibly with a land trust to keep existing homeowners' taxes and rents low, or provide forgivable loans to help people move.
Your goal with economic development is the rising tide.
To that end, Coffin says officials need to listen to what residents are saying. And to be fair, right after the NGA announced it would build its new home in North St. Louis, officials announced Project Connect. At the first public hearing for the project, St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay says the NGA will not be some walled-off compound. And then members of the community stepped to the mic, and officials got an earful.
They sending all us out to the county and everybody coming back to the city, but we won't be able to come back to the city because we won't be able to afford to.
I want to know what's going to happen to the people on St. Louis Avenue. Again, I have been in this neighborhood since I was a little bitty girl, and it's scary.
We have seen this over and over and over. I heard my grandmother talk about it.
My grandmother heard her mother talk about it. This is generations we've gone on for years and years spinning our wheels, and we want the people to be heard.
The money that they're giving us for our homes, no, it's not enough. You're pushing us out of St. Louis, out of downtown area, and putting us in somewhere where we don't want to be.
Mayor Slay says he knows some people are skeptical, even pessimistic, about the NGA project. He can give his own history lesson about decades of disinvestment. But he says letting the NGA go would be a body blow to the city's psyche and pocketbook.
I didn't want to sit around and say, boy, there's a neighborhood we haven't seen investment and development for a long, long time. There's a lot of vacant buildings and that. But we're going to sit here and wait for people to start buying up these properties one by one, rebuilding homes on environmentally contaminated property, and then hopefully maybe sometime in the near future, everything will be great.
Keeping the NGA in town leaves less to chance, Slay says, and he hopes it could right some of the wrongs of the past. He wants to see new transportation projects, more housing, and better jobs.
I want to see a thriving neighborhood where you have places where people go to school, parks, grocery stores, other local businesses and retail.
Slay is the longest-serving mayor in the history of the city. And what happens with the NGA project could shape his legacy.
There's probably a lot of scenarios of failure, okay? And it's our job to make sure that none of those happen. And I can tell you this, that failure would have been to do nothing, to sit on our hands and say, we're not, this is a hard project. This thing started 15 years ago when you really think about it. There's a lot of skepticism about, and then I get the controversy about the McKee, development and what was going on there. But had he not assembled these sites, those jobs would be on their way to Illinois. So ultimately, I've taken the responsibility from this from the beginning in terms of leading the effort, supporting the effort, being part of it, and I'll take responsibility for how this turns out in the end.
The end, so to speak, is a ways off. Construction of the new NGA is expected to take years. In the meantime, Mayor Slay says officials will continue to include residents in neighborhood improvement planning. And the decision to move the spy agency from South to North St. Louis seems to be helping developer Paul McKee get going. He's finally drawing on some of those tax incentives and plans to build a grocery store and gas station. He bought the land where Pruitt-Igoe once stood and is planning to open an urgent care center there. And he says he's going to build 500 housing units nearby. Let's head back to St. Louis Place, the neighborhood where we started this story. All summer, residents have been packing and finding new places to live. But before they leave, they all come together again. It's a muggy July night, and a line of cars circle the 2300 block of Melanfi Street. There's music, kids, and families. On the empty lots between houses are tables loaded with food and people grouped in lawn chairs.
And today we're having our reunion, our last reunion, because this is what we have every July around the 17th or the 16th.
That's Ida Mobley, but everyone calls her Miss Icy.
People that came from all out of town that used to stay in the neighborhood come to visit and stuff, and we just go from one side of the street to the other, and up and down the street, and just eat and party and enjoy ourselves.
Miss Icy holds court in front of her house. At 79, she's one of the oldest on the block, where for the past 15 summers they've held this party. This is the last one. But she says it's time to move on.
My neighbor came to me yesterday. She just moved from across the street, Paula Lotz. And she said, Miss Icy, I came down here to go to the store.
How you be?
To go to the store because I didn't have no coffee. And I really missed you because I could always come over here and get me a cup of coffee. I said, and wherever I move to, we will connect and stuff, and it won't be through death. It'll be through happiness. And you can always come and have a cup of coffee in my house.
Sheila and Gustavo Rendon live right across the street from Miss Icy. They say living on this block was like being part of a big family. Neighbors welcomed new babies together, then shared cribs and clothes. Those kids played together, went to school together, Some even got married and started families of their own. For Gustavo, whose family fled to the U.S. from El Salvador in the 1980s, losing this home, this neighborhood, also means letting go of some of his idealism about America.
You think, you know, when you're down, you know, all the way down there, you think, you know, the United States has freedom, you know, and more opportunities and all this stuff. But I come over here, man, I see that things don't change, man. The United States is willing to do what they were doing to us in South America, to their own black communities here in North St. Louis. And not only here, I'm a truck driver, and I see what's going on over here all throughout the United States. I see it in Houston, I see it in New Jersey. I saw it in New Jersey. Where else? Yeah, those are the less places that I go all the time, but you see it all over the place, you know. There's always, especially close to downtown, there's always a little section of the city that they basically let die in order to eventually come and take it over.
The home where Sheila grew up, that represented the American dream, where she and Gustavo are raising their family, the city appraised it for $16,000. But the Rendons weren't going for it. Because, get this, years earlier, Gustavo's family lost its home to a suburban development led by none other than Paul McKee. Sheila and Gustavo were ready to fight for their home in St. Louis Place. In eminent domain hearings, they made their case and tried to get a better deal. Ultimately, they got a check for $260,000. A big chunk of that amount was awarded because Sheila's family had lived in the house for more than 50 years. The house they planned to move into looks a lot like their old home. Turn-of-the-century brick. It even has the same layout. And it's just a few blocks away from Melanfi Street, still within the St. Louis Place neighborhood. This house has been vacant since the 90s. And to put it mildly, there's a lot of work to do.
We gotta do plumbing, wiring, HVAC, roof, floor, masonry work,
windows,
doors.
The place will need to be gutted, but the couple seems up for the challenge. While we talk, Gustavo digs out a cooler and puts it under a leak in the roof. Part of the back wall is gone, and the sky peeks through in places. But they don't see the problems. They only see the potential. Gustavo and Sheila say they're going to rebuild what they lost. Not just the house, but the community.
Yeah, we'll make it beautiful again. Mm-hmm. And we'll make the black beautiful again. And hopefully we, you know, other people see and you know, want to come and join us. There's plenty of open land over here still.
Right. Yeah, it's really great that you guys want to build the same community spirit that you had.
Yeah. So a lot of people that were devastated, but they know that they can always come back here. So that's what they look forward to. I can't wait until you're at the point where we can party again. Yeah, that's what they want to know. Do you have a yard? Because we just want to have some place that we can barbecue and bring our kids and bring our dogs. And, you know, people are just really waiting for the magic of Melanfi to come back. That's what we want to. We just, you know, rename it. But I don't think people will ever stop thinking about Melanfi or talking about Melanfi. It's just something that, you know, no other neighborhood that we saw had. That's why we had to stay in St. Louis Place.
So we have to give a very special thank you to our colleague Maria Altman for bringing us this story and for sharing it with you guys.
And if you want to keep following Maria's reporting on the NGA and other economic issues in St. Louis, you can find her work at stlpublicradio.org. And if you're listening to us right now on iTunes, please leave us a review. That really helps. And if you're listening to us on NPR One, click the interesting button. That is a big bonus for us.
If you want to interact with us on social media, we're on Twitter at WeLiveHereSTL. And you can also find past shows and lots of extra goodies at our website, WeLiveHere.show.
And We Live Here is produced by me, Tim Lloyd.
And me, Camille Stanley.
Shula Newman is our editor.
And Cassie Morgan composed our theme music.
And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Psst.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.